A reading from the book of Colossians, beginning in the third chapter and the first verse. If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. This is our story, the word of the Lord.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to St. Luke. But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they went to the tomb, taking the spices they had prepared. And they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were perplexed about this, behold, two men stood by them in dazzling apparel. And as they were frightened and bowed their faces to the ground, the men said to them, "Why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you, while he was still in Galilee, that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified and on the third day rise." And they remembered his words. And returning from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary the mother of James and the other women with them who told these things to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter rose and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home marveling at what had happened. This is the gospel of the Lord. Good morning. My name is Ryan. I'm one of the pastors here, and today is a big day for us. Today we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. Now, this is a big Sunday for a couple reasons. Obviously, the main one being that we're celebrating this part of Jesus and his accomplishments. But also, we recognize that this is one of the few times of the year that people will come and join us who are considering this for the first time. So let me just explain a little bit about why this idea of resurrection is so important to us and so central to the way of Jesus. Now, if you look up here on our stage, we have four key images that represent different parts of what we call the gospel. Gospel means good news. So these are the four key parts of what the good news of Jesus is. And so the first part is what's called the incarnation. Big word. I know it's not one we use a lot. But it's the idea of Jesus' life. Jesus experiences all of it, so that he can take power over it. The other part of his humanity is that Jesus then understands that evil doesn't just happen in the world, evil happens in us. We contribute to the brokenness of this world. Can anyone say they have lived a perfect life and have not contributed anything bad to this world ever? No, because you all have your license. Right? You all drive. Have you ever noticed when you're driving how much of a mean person you become? Like, I would like if I was standing in line at like Walmart or something and somebody kind of had to walk in front of me quickly, do you think I would go, "What the heck are you doing? You crazy person, you almost touched me." Right? That would be bonkers to act like that. But when you get in the car, suddenly it's like everything has license in me to come out. I was thinking about this a lot recently. Just going, I got to tone it down when I'm behind the wheel. Why am I so offended? But the reality is that we all have contributed to the brokenness of this world. We're not just victims. We're also perpetrators. What we get in the life of Jesus is his ability to be in it, to know it, to experience it, but not contribute to any of it. To always love. To always do what is right and good. This is what we see in the life of Jesus. But as like if you read the gospel stories about him, the historical accounts, what you see is like clearly this is God, his ability to heal, his ability to do these miraculous things, but also just the beauty of his goodness as a human is compelling. That was enough for many people to follow Jesus. But here's where he kind of goes further than any of us thought he would need to. Is he not only enters into what's wrong in this world, he brings a solution to it. And this is what the cross of Jesus is all about. Here, he takes everything he collected, everything that's wrong in the world, and he kills what's killing us. Can I get an amen to that? Is that good news? And all of his followers, all of his friends, they didn't understand, why is this happening? Is Jesus losing? Is evil winning? Why is he dying? They thought it was the death of their dreams, of their hopes of what he would accomplish, that he would be finally a good king on the earth, a good leader, that he would take control of everything that was wrong. And they didn't understand why he had to die, because Jesus was killing everything that had broken and ruined this world. This is the whole purpose of the death of Christ. But not only does he deal with it from the human side of everything wrong that happened to you, let me kill it, Jesus is essentially saying. Every wrong you have ever done, let me pay the price for that. Because a good God couldn't sit back and go, I'm actually okay with evil in this world. Could a good God do that? No, we go, that's not a good God. But the goodness of God is so good that he not only enters into it, he takes the pain and the punishment for it. So Jesus takes what we need taken, and he actually takes from God all of God's righteous wrath against evil. Jesus takes it, and then here's what he does with it. He buries it. So deep in the ground, the idea is that none of these things can ever come back to haunt. Come back to kill and destroy. Jesus kills it. So this is what brings us to today. Today is the day about resurrection. Today is saying everything that Jesus did and everything that Jesus claimed to be is proven by the fact that it could not hold him in the grave. The resurrection of Jesus is him saying, look at God's ability to triumph over evil. Look at my ability to finish the work I started. Look at me, the victor over all darkness and death and sin and guilt and shame. The resurrection of Jesus means the worst thing is never the last thing. Amen? That's what it means for us. So for those of us who are followers of Jesus, who've been baptized, who've been united to him, what we believe is that his life takes everything that we have done and everything that's been done to us and kills it on the cross with Jesus. And every good part of us that needs to be saved, that needs to be healed and restored, that evil tried to destroy, the resurrection of Jesus brings it back to life. So our baptism for us is saying we're united to this Jesus, to this story, and this good news is my good news for my particular story, my particular sins and pain and hardship, and my hopes for the future. This Jesus is my Jesus, and I trust in him. Is that fair? Is that what we believe, Christ Church? So today is our day to go. No matter what bad happens in this world, we know Jesus wins. No matter what pain that we face in this world, we know Jesus wins. And that we can trust in that. Now, what we see in the gospel story in our reading today from the Gospel of Luke is we actually see a story of reluctance. We see three types of people that are hearing this radical good news that Jesus has come back from the dead. And even though they love Jesus, Even though they are followers of Jesus, they struggle to believe this good news about Jesus. This story is about the fact that you're probably not alone in your reluctance, in your reluctance to believe in the resurrection or to trust in it. And so what I want to look at is three different types of people and their reluctance today in this story. The first is the grieving. The second is the skeptical. And the third is the desperate. So in Luke chapter 24, here what we have is 2 days after the crucifixion of Jesus, we have the followers of Jesus. In verse 1, it says, "But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they went to the tomb, taking the spices they had prepared." In verse 10, it tells us that it's Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and all the other women that were part of the followers of Jesus. These are all grieving people. Now, culturally at that time, it was the women's responsibility to prepare the body for burial. Because Jesus died moments before the Sabbath, which is the day of rest, they had to wait until dawn on the third day. But I can imagine the followers of Jesus are kind of like this close-knit community around our size. I can imagine a conversation between the women and the men as the women prepared to leave. They've prepared all the spices. They've got all the wrappings ready. They're going to go find the body of Jesus in the tomb, and they're going to prepare it for his burial. And I can imagine them standing at the door as a group with everything ready and turning to the apostles, to the other disciples, to the men, and saying, "Are you guys coming?" And what do you think the men said? Maybe nothing. Maybe a grunt of, "What's the point? He's dead." Maybe just a, "No, I'm not coming." I think, as is often the case, the women in the community showcase their commitment to their duty. They're going to do the hard thing because it's the right thing. But they also are showcasing their devotion to Jesus, the person. Not just Jesus, the Messiah, not just Jesus, the King of Israel, not just Jesus, the teacher or rabbi, but the one who loved them, the one who healed them, who valued them. But here's the thing about this group. They're the ones willing to grieve the loss. They're willing to go into the blood and the dirt and the horror of what took place and wash and anoint and prepare him to value him. If we're honest about our culture and the world we live in, our world is uncomfortable with grief, uncomfortable with disappointment, and often sees the one who grieves as problematic, interrupting the fact that we're all just trying to get over it and move on. Right? You might hear phrases like, "Don't bring up the past. It's time to move on. Let it go." But those who are honest about the need to grieve, are the ones that we see in this story will meet the resurrection first. But in their grief, when they're presented with an empty tomb, Jesus isn't there, it's perplexing. They needed to go to that place. They needed to go into the depths of their grief. But what they found there is not a dead body. What they found there instead is resurrection. And I know many of you in your stories, you've been grieving for many years. You've been processing deep, old pain. Both your mistakes and the mistakes of others. But here's what I want to say to you today, as people of the resurrection. Your willingness to go into that tomb and grieve it and process it is so valuable. And I respect you for that. If you avoid going to that place, you'll end up avoiding new life and resurrection. But many of you, you've done that. You've unpacked your story. And you've been willing to be honest about what's in there. But here's the thing. If you do it, if you roll back that tomb and you look inside, what you should find there, as a follower of Jesus is resurrection. You should find new life and new hope there. And even though you might have been reluctant, what you should find there is the fact that Jesus will win over your story. Jesus will be victorious over your trauma. Jesus will mend the parts of you that are broken. Who wants that? Isn't this what we're looking for? And so here's what I want you to hear from me today. I both honor and respect your willingness to go there. And here's what I want you to know. The promise is that it leads to resurrection. What we see in this story is these women, in their reluctance to process it, then are met by two angels who explain to them, why are you looking for the dead here? What lies here is only the living. You will find Jesus in the living. And so I want us to be compelled to go, yes, be honest about the pain. Be honest about what's broken. That's what Christianity offers the world. But also, there's a solution there. That the cross takes it, and the resurrection offers new life. The second group of people we see is that after the grievers hear the good news of Jesus' resurrection, they run back to their community and tell them everything that they heard. In verse 9, it says, in returning from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene and Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told these things to the apostles, but these words seemed to them, these are great phrase, an idle tale. An idle tale. And they did not believe them. Now look, it's easy at first glance to see these skeptics as kind of maybe smug or resistant. But if we give them the full benefit of the doubt, we put ourselves in that situation. Because I think we've all been there. We've all been in the cloud of catastrophe that says everything that is good is being consumed by darkness in this world. Anyone felt like that? Where you're just like, hope is stupid. You ever felt like that? To expect that there's anything good in this world is just dumb. We've all seen that evil always wins. We've all seen that the darkness seems to be in control of everyone. Anyone felt like that? So we know what it's like to be that level of discouraged, disheartened. The idea that love would win over hate, that humility would triumph over the greedy and the powerful. Or that good guys will always, what, come first? No, come in last. Right? That's this feeling of like the idea of something that good, like Christ defeating all evil and all darkness and even death itself is just naive. But here's the truth. People aren't skeptical because they want the darkness. They're skeptical because the darkness has beaten them up so badly that the idea of being free of it feels like a cruel hope. Those who are most skeptical are probably those who have worked the hardest to keep their head above water, trying to do good. Now, the skeptic needs to hear what we see as the New Testament scriptures go on is that the skeptic needs to hear a lot of testimony before their heart can soften enough to be ready for hope again. Now, Easter Sunday is actually kind of a time to go, we're coming after you, skeptics. We're going to convince you the resurrection happened. But the truth is, I think my heart today would be more so that we get it. Something this good needs to prove itself. What we see in the story is that those who were grieving the most found real hope, found breakthrough of revelation that God lifted their hearts out of the grave. I believe that these skeptics are meant to hear the testimony of the grieving, to see that the resurrection of Jesus is legit, is real. And to be honest, I think that's probably one of the best descriptors of what our community is. We're people that have been through it. Been broken, been pained, been guilty. And we have found a Jesus who understands us, who saves us, and who can lift us out of that darkness. Do you agree with me, Christ Church? But eventually, what the skeptic is going to need to see is to hear enough testimony that this Jesus worked for you, that they'll eventually warm up to the idea to go, then I need to experience this Jesus for myself. For my unique story, for my unique sins, I need this Jesus for me. The last kind of person that we see in this story is a little bit of my favorite. I see myself probably most here. And our third person is, his name is Peter. And I would say Peter is the desperate. In verse 12, when Peter hears this story of the women, it says, Peter rose and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home marveling at what had happened. What makes Peter different from all the skeptics in the room? The reason Peter runs to the tomb is because he is so personally desperate. He desperately wants this to be true. He wants this idea of a goodness breaking into the world and winning. He's ready for it. Now, Peter, in the whole story, Peter is a guy who has made an absolute mess of his life. His catastrophe is not from the outside. It's not from the outside in. His catastrophe was internal. He denied Jesus when he was being crucified. Peter fails his family and his community. Peter betrays his own values. For Peter, if Jesus is resurrected from the dead, then maybe his life can be resurrected too. He sees the need for a power greater than himself to pull him up out of the mess he created. He sees the need for a goodness that is purer than his best efforts to train and empower him for a life of goodness. Here's what I want you to understand. The resurrection of Jesus is both a historical event that changes everything, but it also does things deeply internal within people. Like your inability to do the good things you want to do. Like maybe you're not self-controlled, or maybe you're not as disciplined as you'd like to be, or maybe you're not good at following through on things, or maybe you find it hard to do certain stuff. The resurrection of Jesus is this burning goodness inside of you that makes you able to do what you couldn't do before. For Peter, this is the hope that if Jesus is alive, then Jesus can still intervene and change him the way he longs to be changed. Peter sees the need for a vision and for a mission that is even better than his ideas and his definitions of success that he held before. Peter has come to a point in his life where everything he thought he was supposed to do has crumbled. Everything he thought he was good at, he now finds he's not. But everything in him is going, but if I just have Jesus alive, then I have everything I need. And what this moment cues is a complete transformation of Peter's life. We see from this moment on, for the rest of his days, that Peter has a full, fruitful, good, impactful life. So we hear this story, this idea that God would love the world so much that he would die for us, but also that God is so good and powerful that he wins, that he triumphs over evil and darkness. That this level of goodness can exist in the world and can work for me. The different parts of us, our reluctance because of our grief, our reluctance because of our skepticism, and our desperation in us, all of it finds everything it's looking for when it finds Jesus resurrected. The church is meant to be primarily a people marked by the resurrection. That everything bad loses, and that everything that is good in Jesus will ultimately win. Whatever category you find yourself in today, if you came in grieving, if you came in skeptical, if you came in desperate, Jesus is everything that you actually came looking for. And so we want to offer a moment now to respond to that invitation. So if you're comfortable with it, would you just close your eyes for a moment, all of us? And I want you to get in touch with your own heart for a second. What are your greatest needs? What did you come here today with that you're struggling with and struggling under? And what if Jesus is the only true solution to that? Maybe you came in tired of being sad, tired of being broken. Maybe you came in tired and disillusioned with doing everything yourself. What if this is the relief that you've been looking for? Where did you come in desperate today to go, I actually need some intervention in my life? I need goodness to break through into the darkness I'm struggling with. What if Jesus is that light that you've been looking for? As you get in touch with your heart of where you're really at and what you really need, what I want you now to feel is the closeness, the reality, and the power of the presence of Jesus. That Jesus is alive and working in this world. And you have not been forgotten or overlooked. You are not insignificant to him. You are the reason for everything he did. You are the one that he loves. You are the one that he came to save. You are the one that he is passionate to help. So if our greatest needs are met with Jesus' greatest accomplishments, what do we do? All we do is what's called faith. We receive, we trust, and we receive what's being offered to us in Jesus. All we add to the process is a yes. It's like God is saying, here's everything I have done for you. And our response is then, well, what do you require of me? And his answer is just say yes. Let me give it all to you. Let me give it all to you. So the question is, do you want that?